Russia claims 600 Ukrainian soldiers were killed in Kramatorsk. But is it true?
Neither appeared to have been directly hit by missiles or seriously damaged. There were no obvious signs that soldiers had been living there, and no sign of bodies or traces of blood.
Plus, one of Kyiv's most significant cultural sites is back under Ukrainian control.
On January 7, 2023, a truly historic event for Ukraine is taking place here.
And later in the program, if Volodymyr Zelensky can make good on his pledge to recapture all of Ukraine's territory in 2023, what needs to happen? Today is Monday, January 9th. From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. The war in Ukraine is showing no signs of slowing down for winter, and that includes the war of words. Russian authorities claim that a recent attack has left 600 Ukrainian soldiers dead. Ukrainians say that simply isn't true. Mimi Montgomery has the story.
Russia claims it's carried out a deadly attack on Ukrainian troops, but Kyiv denies there are casualties. The Russian Defense Ministry says its missiles hit two temporary bases housing more than 1,000 Ukrainian troops in Kramatorsk, killing 600 of them. A ministry spokesman says the strikes were retaliation for a recent Ukrainian attack in Makiivka, which they claim left 89 Russian soldiers dead. However, Sergei Sherevachi, a spokesperson for Ukraine's forces in the east, told the Associated Press that the Russian strikes on Kramatorsk damaged only civilian infrastructure and that the armed forces of Ukraine were not affected. The Donetsk Regional Administration confirms there were no casualties, but says seven Russian missiles hit Kramatorsk and two more hit Konstantinivka. Among damaged buildings were an educational house and an industrial facility. I'm Mimi Montgomery.
Following up on Russia's claim of 600 deaths in an attack in Kramatorsk, Reuters reporters visited the scene. Trevor Coral tells us what they found.
A Russian rocket strike on the Ukrainian city of Kramatorsk caused damage, but there were no obvious signs of casualties, a Reuters witness said on Sunday. And that's after Russia said the strikes had killed 600 Ukrainian soldiers and was a revenge operation for a deadly attack on a Russian barracks in Makiivka that killed at least 89 servicemen. Reuters reporters visited the two college dormitories Russia's defense ministry said had been temporarily housing Ukrainian servicemen at the time of the overnight strikes. Neither appeared to have been directly hit by missiles or seriously damaged. There were no obvious signs that soldiers had been living there and no sign of bodies or traces of blood. There was an explosion and then another explosion. The windows shook, said this local resident. Really, there's nothing else to tell you. Just a normal day. Authorities in Kyiv did not immediately comment on the strike or on Russia's claim of hundreds of deaths. Kramatorsk's mayor earlier said there had been no casualties. If the Kremlin's claim was confirmed, it would be the single largest loss of Ukrainian troops since Russia invaded on February 24th last year. Neither side in the grinding war, now in its 11th month, usually disclosed losses. Kramatorsk lies a few miles north of Bakhmut, a small city which Russia has been trying to take for more than 5 months and has become the scene of some of the fiercest fighting in recent weeks.
That's Reuters' Trevor Coral. A visit to one of Kyiv's most significant cultural sites in a few minutes. But first, Ukrainian authorities have reported more civilian deaths. From the Associated Press, Charles Della Desma has the story.
Ukraine's presidential office says at least three civilians have been killed and 12 or more have been wounded over the past 24-hour period in Russian attacks. The toll includes casualties from a strike on the market in Shevchenko, a village of some 6,500 people, and in the eastern Donetsk region, where fierce battles continue around the cities of Bakhmut and Solidar, while in Kherson, a city in the south of Ukraine that was retaken by Kyiv's forces in November, the Russian military fired at a residential district, wounding citizens during the attack, and in towns near the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, the region's governor says, The attackers used heavy artillery and damaged several houses, a gas pipeline, and a power line. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Pope Francis says that wars like the one in Ukraine are crimes against humanity. We'll hear from him shortly. Now, though, with differing accounts of an attack on Kramatorsk and the Ukrainian Orthodox Church returning to one of its holy sites, we turn to Anna Chernikova for an update from Kyiv.
This information from Russian side appeared right after it was confirmed that actually Ukrainian forces managed to kill hundreds of Russian soldiers in Makiivka, Donetsk region. For the moment, we do not have any confirmation of this report by Russian officials. So there is no confirmation of the attack in Kramatorsk that could have killed and could have caused this kind of this amount of casualties from the Ukrainian side. Even more, our colleagues, international journalists, who are currently locating there in that area, they also do not confirm this information. For the moment, I cannot really confirm this. And according to Ukrainian authorities, again, this information is not considered as something that really happened.
Are the people in Kyiv, are they just the general public, do they believe this has happened? Are they concerned?
You know, to be honest, Ukrainians in general do not believe this information because Ukrainians at this point of time, it's almost a year since the full-scale invasion, Ukrainians learn to check information and to filter information they get. Of course, it looks very suspicious that right after this confirmed successful operation by Ukrainian forces, Russia is getting out to the publicity with this kind of news that they killed even more people. So and to be honest, also it's really difficult to hide, at least in Ukraine, it's really difficult to hide this kind of news. So if this would have happened, really, at least locals would really, had this information available, and people would, know this from inside sources. So for the moment, I can just say that people do not really trust this, and people really, in this particular case, people trust official sources and do not trust Russian official sources. This is probably the main point.
Changing gears a bit, Anna, it's a busy day for you here on the show. We'll have you back on in a few moments telling us about a very special event at one of Kyiv's biggest cultural sites. Can you tell us what we're going to hear?
Yes, actually, over the weekend, a very truly historic event happened in Ukraine, particularly in Kyiv. And here we're talking about one of the main cathedral complex in Ukraine, which is Kyiv-Pechersk Lavra. And for decades, if this church was used by Russian church represented in Ukraine. And finally for Ukrainians, because a lot of Ukrainians wished for this day to come. This year, Ukrainian officials returned this complex, the main part of this complex, to the Ukrainian church, and it was the first ever Ukrainian church service marking Christmas Day for those who celebrated Christmas on the 7th of January. So it was really, really important and historic event, and a lot of people were gathering, a lot of people came in order to, be to witness and to be a part of this historic event. And so the story would basically go into a little bit deeper into that event.
And that's coming up next here on the show. Anna, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. As we've just heard from Anna Chernikova in Kyiv, the head of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church has conducted the first service in the Kyiv-Pechersk Lavra Cathedral, one of Ukraine's main religious and cultural institutions, and a UNESCO heritage site. Previously, it was completely under control of the Russian Orthodox Church.
Kyiv-Pechersk Lavra, one of Ukraine's main religious and cultural institutions, UNESCO Heritage. On January 7, 2023, a truly historic event for Ukraine is taking place here. For the first time in many decades, Lavra is getting back under the control of the Ukrainian Church. Today, we are witnessing the first service by the head of the Ukrainian Church in Lavra's main cathedral. For many years, Russian Church in Ukraine had a monopoly on the use of the complex facilities. At the end of 2022, the main part of Lavra complex was officially returned to the Ukrainian Church. The decision regarding the remaining facilities is to be taken in 2023. Russia's full-scale invasion had a strong impact on religious life in Ukraine. Sociological survey published at the end of last year shows that 78% of Ukrainians believe that the state should intervene in the activities of the Russian Church in Ukraine. 54% of them believe that this church should be completely banned. Time will tell whether this event will be decisive in the transformation of religious life in Ukraine. Anna Chernikova for VOA News, Kyiv.
And on the subject of religion, Pope Francis said on Monday that wars like the one in Ukraine, where civilian areas are subjected to what he calls indiscriminate destruction, are a crime against God and humanity. Francis made his remarks in his yearly speech to diplomats accredited to the Vatican, an overview of the world situation which has come to be known informally as his State of the World Address. Francis spoke of the war in Ukraine with its attacks on civil infrastructure that cause lives to be lost, not only from gunfire and acts of violence, but also from hunger and freezing cold.
Oggi è in corso la terza guerra mondiale di un mondo globalizzato.
Today, the Third World War is taking place in a globalized world, where conflicts involve only certain areas of the planet directly, but in fact, involve them all. The closest and most recent example is certainly the war in Ukraine, with its wake of death and destruction, with its attacks on civil infrastructures that cause lives to be lost not only from gunfire and acts of violence, but also from hunger and freezing cold. For its part, the Consiliere Constitution Gaudium et Spes states that every act of war directed to the indiscriminate destruction of whole cities or vast areas with their inhabitants is a crime against God and humanity, which merits firm and unequivocal condemnation. Nor can we forget that war particularly affects those who are most fragile, children, the elderly, the disabled, and leaves an indelible mark on families. Today, I feel bound to renew my appeal for an immediate end to this senseless conflict, whose effects are felt in entire regions, also outside of Europe, due to its repercussions in the areas of energy and food production, above all in Africa and in the Middle East.
The Pope repeated his appeal for a total ban on nuclear weapons, saying their possession, even for reasons of deterrence, is immoral. The families of fallen soldiers, in a few minutes. Now, with upgraded weaponry and Western support, 2023 is off to a good start for Ukraine. President Volodymyr Zelensky said that this year Ukraine would recapture all of the territory that Russia has annexed. Is this really possible? Liz Sly is a global affairs correspondent for The Washington Post. Her analysis piece appears in the January 9th edition of the paper. You say in your piece that if 2023 continues as it began, there's a good chance that Ukraine will be able to fulfill President Zelensky's pledge to retake all of Ukrainian territory. Do you really think that's true?
I think the Ukrainians have a very good chance of winning the war this year because there's so much going in their favor at the moment. But the longer you look ahead, of course, the harder it gets to predict because there are so many uncertainties here, so many uncertainties that could build up. that they only mount the longer we go on, and the situation might never be as good for Ukraine as it is now. So what I'm really saying is that Ukraine has its best shot right now.
So let's break this up into two sections, if we can. What are the advantages that Ukraine has right now? And then let's talk about what are the disadvantages to a longer, more protracted fight?
Well, the advantages Ukraine has right now are, unwavering Western support. Whether there's enough Western support to push it over the edge, to take a decisive edge, still isn't clear. I think that's why we're starting to see some of the Western countries step up and send higher-grade weaponry and materials, such as the combat vehicles that they've recently announced. And they seem to be looking now at tanks as well. But it's absolutely clear that the support isn't wavering. And if anything, the West is looking at upping its game with Ukraine. They do want to push it over the edge. And, I mean, Ukraine has many other advantages that probably won't go away, such as incredibly high motivation to stop their country from being taken over by Russia. And that's really only grown as the war has gone on because of stories of activities of the Russians, that kind of thing. The behavior of Russian troops in the areas they've occupied has given Ukraine even stronger incentives to take back that land. They are united. There's very little sign of political dissent in Ukraine. Nobody's, Zelensky remains hugely popular. And all of those things are unlikely to go away, the will to fight. And also they have proved that they have the better army. They are tactically superior. They do have better weapons than Russian for sure right now. And they've been very, very clever. Although they can't always match Russia man for man, and certainly earlier in the war couldn't match it artillery for artillery, for example, they've outwitted the Russians on many occasions.
So let's talk about now the disadvantages to a longer protracted fight. Why is it in Putin's favor to wait Ukraine out?
Well, I think that you can't guarantee Western support indefinitely into the future. So much will depend on what happens in the 2024 election in the United States. The Republicans have already made noises that they're not prepared to give Ukraine a blank check, for example, and they kind of imply that President Biden has been doing that. Ukraine has a huge package of aid already in Congress for the next year, and that will keep it going for the next year. But who knows what will happen after that? Of course, the Republicans may not win and the Democrats may remain as staunchly behind Ukraine as they are now. It's a big uncertainty, though, and it's not an uncertainty that's going to happen in the near term while Ukraine is enjoying these advantages. And longer term, so many things become much harder to predict. We also, of course, can't predict what will happen in Russia. Is Putin going to remain popular? Are Russians going to continue to show up on the front lines? It's already clear that they're very reluctant. I just think the more uncertainty you introduce, the harder it becomes to see a Ukrainian victory, although it's not impossible. And I'm not saying that Ukraine couldn't win a long war. It just looks like it just becomes so much harder for them to guarantee the kind of ingredients and building blocks that they would need to win that war over the long term.
So you're writing for The Washington Post. Also in The Washington Post this past weekend, Condoleezza Rice said what Vladimir Putin is fighting for is what he believes is his destiny to reconstruct the Russian Empire.
Yes, I mean, I think we've seen that very clearly. I mean, Ukraine was a part of Russia for parts of history, parts of Ukraine's history, parts of Russian history, not all of it. Putin clearly believes Ukraine is a fundamental part of Russia. And having gone out on a limb to try and make it part of Russia again, he's really kind of committed to staying out on that limb. He hasn't given himself any walking space back.
So that brings up my question is, how does this end if Putin has no space to walk it back?
Well, there are so many ways it could end. One is that the Ukrainians could win, and they, they've demonstrated lots of reasons why they might be able to. Of course, there are lots of reasons why they might not. Another is that it drags onto a very long war with frozen front lines. We can't forget that the war began in 2014 and continued until the new invasion last year. And frozen lines like that could just drag on for years and years and years. You know, we're looking at nearly a 12th year of war in Syria now. And then, of course, that would give the chance to Russia to reconstitute and rebuild itself and maybe come back with even more force, just as it did in 2022 after initially trying to take parts of Ukraine in 2014-15. So I think the most likely scenario beyond an outright victory for Ukraine is a very, very long war. It's very hard to see Russia winning right now because they kind of had their best shot last year and they didn't take it. They failed.
What do you think the future might hold for Western support in the United States and in Europe if this goes on, say, another 2 years?
Well, we really, you know, lots of people have been predicting the waning of Western support for a long time, and it just hasn't happened, and it seems to be getting stronger. So it is very hard to predict. I think certainly in Europe, it is viewed as a somewhat existential fight because Europe's defense posture has been for decades geared around confronting first the Soviet Union and then to a much lesser extent Russia. But now that that threat has materialized, I do feel that Europe's very committed to remaining on the course, and it's absolutely clear that Biden is. It's less clear that the Republicans are, but then, of course, some of them are. So it's really hard to predict.
That's Liz Sly, a global affairs correspondent for The Washington Post. She's based in London. In early December, Ukrainian officials say they estimated between 10 and 13,000 Ukrainian soldiers had been killed since Russia invaded Ukraine in February. We visited Lviv to meet with some of the families that have lost loved ones in the war. Omilan Ashduliak has the story.
Irina Dadak walks along a Lviv street once named after Russian poet Nikolai Nekrasov. After Russia's invasion, street names here have been changed. One is now named after her husband.
Our kids say this is Dead Street. I'm proud of my husband and I respect his choice.
Irina's husband, Yuri Dadak, who wrote under the pen name Yuri Ruf, joined Ukraine's armed forces as a volunteer on day one of Russia's invasion. A few weeks after the start of the war, on April 1st, Yuri Dadak died in the Luhansk region. Irina is bringing up their two daughters, 7-year-old Katerina and 12-year-old Roxolana. Together with other families of fallen defenders, they attended a children's holiday party organized by volunteers.
Our mission is to show families affected by the war that life goes on. They are not alone. They are important to us. We have to be a society that is responsible and grateful.
Maria Buljak is a mother of five. Her two youngest daughters are only 4 and 6. They don't yet understand that their father is dead.
They would say, "Mommy, why did Daddy leave his phone? Give it to me, we could call him." They don't understand their daddy is gone. I can only tell them their daddy is an angel and a star, and he's always with us.
In over 10 months since the start of the war, over 180 kids from military families in Lviv have lost one of their parents. Omelyana Shudlyak for VOA News, Lviv, Ukraine.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America, Washington, D.C.